hard for me to know what to believe anymore. Every time I turn around, somebody is sending me or somebody's posting a link to some news story. And, you know, sometimes they're news stories that are kind of hard to believe, outlandish things. And because sometimes reality is stranger than fiction, I don't know whether these stories are real news or whether they're fake news. And we've heard a lot about fake news lately, right? There's been a lot of talk about fake news. And it's sometimes really hard to tell the difference between real news and fake news. Now, when I was growing up, you could tell the difference. If you were standing in the checkout line at the grocery store, and the title at the top of the magazine was National Enquirer, then you knew. Fake news. You knew. You couldn't really trust anything that was contained in those pages. But in the last few years, there's been this proliferation of Photoshopped pictures and propaganda and sometimes just straight up lies that have been made up that are disseminated as real news. And at first glance, it really is hard to know the difference between what's true and what's false. And I'll tell you the effect it's had on me. I've very much gotten into the habit of fact checking. I'll wear Snopes.com out. I go there all the time. You know about Snopes? You can go to Snopes.com and you can check out any story, urban legend, whatever it is. You can type it in and it will tell you, based on all the research that is contained in there, whether that claim or that story is true or whether it's false. And so I need to just go ahead and tell you that no, Father of the Bride 3 is not being filmed in Clemson, South Carolina. That's not true. And no, the city of Miami is not creating a texting lane on the interstate to accommodate millennial drivers. That's not going to happen either. And no, there's not a small town in Georgia that has an infestation of venomous snakes in their sewer system. All of those are fake news. And there's so many of those stories going around that I've gotten to the point where I find myself always looking for verification of whatever the story is. I find myself always looking for proof. I think I am more skeptical than I have ever been in my life. And maybe that's true for you too. Maybe I'm not alone in that. Maybe you find yourself looking for proof too. And this is on my mind this morning because I think that a lot of people come to Easter with that same skepticism. I think for many of us, it's a hard story to swallow. When it comes to the resurrection, we have this desire for verification. We have this desire for proof. And maybe that's you this morning. Maybe you've come here this morning and you really didn't want to come, but your family said you had to if you wanted to eat lunch with them. And maybe that's why you're here. Maybe you walked into this space this morning and you walked in with your arms already crossed. And you're skeptical about this wild story. And that's understandable because it is an outlandish claim that someone who was very much dead on Friday could all of a sudden be very much alive on Sunday, because that doesn't happen. And if you're going to claim that, you would think that you'd be ready to provide some verification, some proof for that outlandish claim. Right? Well, this morning we're going to see what kind of proof we find in our scripture lesson from the Gospel of Mark. This comes from Mark chapter 16. And I'm going to begin reading with verse 1. Saturday evening, when the Sabbath ended, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome went out and purchased burial spices so they could anoint Jesus' body. Very early on Sunday morning, just at sunrise, they went to the tomb. On the way, they were asking each other, "Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance of the tomb?" But as they arrived, they looked up and saw that the stone, which was very large, had already been rolled aside. When they entered the tomb, they saw a young man clothed in a white robe sitting on the right side. The women were shocked. But the angel said, "Don't be alarmed. You're looking for Jesus of Nazareth who was crucified. He isn't here. He is risen from the dead. Look, this is the place where they laid his body. Now, go and tell his disciples, including Peter, that Jesus is going ahead of you to Galilee. And you'll see him there, just as he told you before he died. And the women fled the tomb, trembling and bewildered, and they said nothing to anyone because they were too frightened. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. So here's how I'd like for you to help me this morning. I'd like for you to turn to a couple of people around you and deliver this message. The message is, you are the proof. Can you do that for me? You are the proof. Now, you know this story. Jesus had been crucified on Friday, and during the crucifixion, the disciples scattered. They ran for their lives. They were scared and they scattered, but the women remained around the cross, and they were there and they looked on in horror as Jesus breathed his last breath. They watched as his lifeless body was taken down from the cross. And in fact, they had to hurry to get him in the tomb before the Sabbath started at sundown. And the first chance they got after the Sabbath was over, early on that Sunday morning, just as the sun was rising, they came back to the tomb to do what they didn't have time to do on Friday. They came to anoint the body. And when they get there, they find that the stone had already been rolled away. Now, they've been worried about that on the way, but they get there and they see that the stone's already rolled away and they're able to walk right in. But they don't find what they were looking for. They don't find the body to anoint. Instead, what they see is this angel who's sitting there, and the angel says to them, "Don't be alarmed." Now, I'm just guessing that the women were probably thinking, "Too late for that, brother. You're standing in the grave of our friend and we don't see his body anywhere in sight. The alarm ship has already sailed." But the angel really doesn't give them time to respond at all. He just says, "Look, don't be alarmed. You're looking for Jesus of Nazareth who was crucified, but he's not here. He's risen from the dead. Now look, you can see where his body was laid, but he's gone. So I don't want you to waste any time hanging around the tomb. I want you to go and tell Peter and those other disciples that Jesus has been raised from the dead and he's already halfway to Galilee by now and he'll meet y'all there." Galilee. Galilee? Galilee is out in the boondocks. It's way out in the country. Nobody but poor farmers and ignorant fishermen live in Galilee. Why would Jesus go to Galilee? I mean, you'd think that Jesus would go to someplace more important than that. If I'd been Jesus, my first stop would have been the palace in Jerusalem where Pontius Pilate was staying. And I'd have strolled up to that palace. I'd have knocked on that door. "April Fools. Pilate, you remember me? I'm back." Why not show up to somebody important like Pontius Pilate? Or if not Pontius Pilate, why not go to King Herod? Or why not go to the chief priest? Or shoot, if you've been raised from the dead, why not just go to Rome and stroll into Caesar's palace and let him know that you're back? I mean, why did Jesus pick Galilee? The angel said, "Jesus isn't here. He's been raised from the dead. Now go and tell those slackers who betrayed and denied and abandoned him that he's going to meet them in Galilee." Just like he said, Jesus is coming back to them. See, thankfully, Jesus' faithfulness to us is not contingent on our faithfulness to him. Because the disciples, they deserted and abandoned Jesus in the moment when he needed them the most. But even in spite of that, he is coming back and he's sent word through this angel that I'm going to meet you. I'm going to come back in Galilee. That's where you'll find me. Now, you couldn't have a group of friends and disciples disappoint you more than those 12. But the good news on Easter is not only that Jesus has defeated sin and death, but also that he's coming back to these disappointing disciples. And it's just that he won't give up on them. And he's going to meet them where this whole thing started, in Galilee. That's Jesus' plan. And if anything is going to happen next, if there's going to be a rest of the story to tell, it'll be because Jesus meets his disciples there in Galilee, just like he said. And then the next thing Mark tells us, this is verse 8. The women fled from the tomb, trembling and bewildered, and they said nothing to anyone because they were too frightened. Now, you should know that nearly all scholars agree that verse 8 was the original ending of Mark. If you're following along in your Bible, when we read that earlier, you might see that you have some footnotes and there's some explanations, and there are even more verses after that. And you'll probably see a heading that says the shorter ending of Mark, and then there's the longer ending of Mark. But there is widespread agreement among scholars that both of those endings were added later, sometime in the second century, by somebody other than Mark. Now, why would they do that? Why would somebody amend Mark's gospel like that? Well, because they couldn't stand how Mark ended this good news about Jesus. Just hanging out there. And you can't really blame them, because it is a weird ending. I mean, in Matthew and Luke and John, we at least have some stories of post-resurrection Jesus. In fact, he makes a lot of appearances. One time he shows up to the disciples and Thomas happens not to be there, but he shows himself to them and proves by the scars in his hands and on his feet and in his side that he really is raised from the dead. And then, because Thomas said that he wouldn't believe it unless he saw it for himself, Jesus shows back up again the week later and does it all over again. Or then there's another story about how he shows up on the shore of the Sea of Galilee and he gathers with his disciples and he cooks breakfast on the beach and they all eat breakfast together. And yet another story about how he shows up to some disciples who are on the road to a village called Emmaus and he reveals himself to them. But here in Mark, we don't get any of those stories. We get nothing. No appearance stories, no proof, nothing for Snopes.com to go on to let anybody know that this angel isn't just passing along fake news. All we have is an empty tomb and a promise. Jesus isn't here. He's been raised from the dead, and he's coming to meet you. He's going to come to you. He's going to come for you in Galilee. It might be helpful to know that while the Gospel of Mark is the earliest gospel, it wasn't written down until about 65 AD. That's roughly 30, 35 years after the crucifixion and resurrection. And by that time, the Christian movement was spreading far and wide. They were already gaining lots of traction. And now they were still very much persecuted by their Jewish brothers and sisters, and they were still very much persecuted by the Roman Empire. But the early church was growing. And the message of Jesus and his resurrection is starting to spread like wildfire. And I mention that to you only to point out that it's not that Mark omits these appearance stories because he doesn't know them. He knows them. In fact, the Apostle Paul, who's writing 15, 20 years earlier than this, Paul already knows the appearance stories. And he says, 1 Corinthians, Jesus was raised from the dead and he appeared to Peter and to the other disciples. And then he says, and to one as untimely born, he appeared also to me. So 20 years later, Mark surely knows those stories. He knows that Jesus appeared to the disciples. Every Christian in Mark's day knew about the resurrection appearances. So why didn't Mark include any of those stories? Why would he end this whole thing with this cliffhanger, the women leaving the tomb frightened and not saying anything to anybody? Why not offer some verification? Why not offer some proof to make sure that people knew that this news wasn't fake news? This was very much real. I think the answer is that Mark means to say to all those Christian communities to which his gospel circulated, I think what Mark's trying to communicate is, hey, you are the proof. 35 years later, the fact that anybody still remembers who Jesus is, the fact that Jesus wasn't just forgotten as another wild-eyed teacher who was exterminated by Rome or some insurrectionist who was exterminated by Rome, the fact that you know who Jesus is, that is proof. Mark is saying, look, Christians, the fact that you exist, the fact that your house churches gather for worship and you defy Rome under the threat of persecution, the fact that you risk your lives to spread this good news about Jesus and Easter, that is proof. You are the proof. The fact that those 12 slackers who denied and abandoned Jesus later became so courageous and so emboldened that nobody, not even the Roman emperor, could stop them from taking the message that Jesus Christ is Lord to all the world, that is the proof. So Mark is saying, look, isn't it obvious? Jesus did meet those disciples in Galilee. The women didn't remain quiet forever. Jesus met them and Jesus empowered them. And now you, church, are the proof. See, I promise you, if you had pulled Pontius Pilate to the side after the crucifixion, and you said, hey, Pilate, let me holler at you just for a second. You know that rabbi that you just killed? You know the one you just crucified on the cross? God is about to raise him to new life. And not only that, but those followers of his who ran and hid because they were afraid of you, Pilate. Well, after his resurrection, they are going to become so courageous that you aren't going to be able to stop them. Really. You won't be able to stop them. You think the Roman Empire is big stuff, but let me tell you, one day the church that these followers of Jesus are going to create is going to be bigger than the Roman Empire. In fact, Pilate, this is going to surprise you, but one day that cross that you so frequently hang people on will be a world-renowned symbol. But it won't remind people of the power of the Roman Empire. It will remind people of the power of Jesus Christ. Now, I hate to break it to you, Pilate, but one day the Roman Empire will be no more. It'll be gone. But don't worry. People are still going to visit Rome. They're not going to go to Rome to visit the tomb of Julius Caesar. They're not going to visit the grave of Caesar Augustus. But one day, people will visit Rome and they're going to gather in this place called St. Peter's Basilica. It's going to be a building built by the church. And it's going to be built on top of the Roman Emperor Nero's circus that'll be long gone. And it's going to seat 60,000 people, and Christians from around the world are going to gather there to proclaim that Jesus Christ is Lord and he is risen from the dead. Now, I don't know how you say fake news in Latin, but I do know this. If you had pulled Pilate to the side and told him those things, he would have laughed in your face. And he'd have called it fake news. He'd have said, Jesus, the guy we got rid of him. What is this, some kind of April Fool's joke? I just killed this guy. There is no way he's alive again. That's impossible. But here's what the Gospel of Mark would have said. No. See, because when the women went to the tomb on that Sunday morning to anoint the body, here's what they found. The stone had been rolled away. The tomb was empty, and the angel who was in there said, you're looking for Jesus who was crucified? He's not here. He is risen from the dead. Pilate, we're not really interested in what you think is possible. Jesus is about to take these 11 slackers. He's going to meet them in Galilee, and they are going to become the proof of the resurrection, and they're going to take over the world. And Advent That same spirit that lived in those disciples, the same spirit that raised Jesus from the dead, now lives in you. You are the proof. Go be the proof.